This is the Heritage Radio News, bringing you top food stories from down the street and around the world with your Heritage Radio News team, Erica Wides, Patrick Martins, Jack Kinsley on sports, and Mike Edison on weather.
Welcome to Heritage Radio Network News for the week of April 28th. I'm Erica Wides, co-anchoring with Patrick Martins.
Hi, Erica.
Hi, Patrick. Our top stories this week, endangered sushi fish, Canadian cannabis, and your brain is made of fat. And Jack, what have you got for us today from the world of sports?
A little Summer Olympics food roundup, including some nugget news. We'll get to that
nugget
later.
It's coming up 100 days till the Olympics.
That's right.
And Mike, how's the weather out there?
It's terrible. A colossal bummer.
All right. Another cheerful little report from Mike Edison coming up later in the show. But now, our top story. Do you like sushi tuna? Well, you may want to find a new raw fish favorite. As we've known for over two decades, things are really, really bad for the bluefin and yellowfin tuna. A report coming out in July from the International Scientific Committee for Tuna and Tuna-like Species in the North Pacific Ocean, ooh, that's a mouthful, says the future is bleak for bluefin tuna. The report continues that the species population has dropped by more than 97% from its historic levels just a century ago. Bluefin is considered to be at only 2.6% of the population it would be at if it were not fished and eaten. That's down from a previous assessment of 4.2%. An estimate of the tonnage of fish in the seas puts bluefin at 17,000 tons, reduced from 2014's estimate of 26,000, nearly half. Japan eats roughly 80% of the world's bluefin tuna supply, and even though Japan is wholly aware of the destruction of the species that its runaway obsession with Kuromaguro causes, it simply cannot stay its hand. When Japan's self-styled tuna king, Kiyoshi Kimura, proudly paid $118,000 for a single 200-kilo bluefin, many a conservationist saw the act as the death rattle of an industry long ago off the rails. Ironically, even as recently as 50 years ago, Pacific bluefin was thought of as junk fish and was frequently used for cat food. But as Japan and international taste for sushi grew, it became the diamond of the sea. Amanda Nixon, director for global tuna conservation at the Pew Charitable Trust, says the situation is really as bad as it appears. The scientists who compiled the report said improved data made them more confident in their latest estimates than in previous ones. Now everyone is trying to figure out what to do. According to the report, with current levels of reproduction and management in the Pacific fisheries, the chance of rebuilding stocks to a healthy level is only 0.1%. A goal of rebuilding the species to 6.4% or 42,000 metric tons by 2024 has been set, but even at that level, the species is not guaranteed to recover. Experts believe that 20% of historic levels is the least required to keep the fish sustainable, more than five times what we currently are. The situation is dire for the Pacific bluefin tuna as we've eaten it to death. So maybe next time, order the California roll.
Wow, Erica, what an eye-popping story. So should I stop eating tuna altogether, 100%, even canned tuna?
Well, there are certain species that are okay to eat. Albacore is fine. The albacore population is healthy. But the larger fish, the bluefin and the yellowfin tuna, are really seriously at risk and on the brink of species collapse. Not to mention that they're all very high in mercury contamination, too. So, you know, I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm getting dumber with age. I don't need to accelerate that by eating more mercury.
I agree. Yeah. Well, in other news, Canada's Liberal government said on Wednesday that it'll introduce a law in the spring of 2017 to legalize recreational marijuana, fulfilling an election pledge. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau promised during last year's election campaign that his Liberals would push to legalize recreational marijuana, and now it appears to be happening. The announcement came on April 20th, or 420, a day and time celebrated by tokers across North America. Hundreds gathered outside of Canada's parliament on Wednesday to smoke marijuana in solidarity with the announcement. Here in the U.S., Alaska, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington State, and Washington, D.C., have already legalized recreational marijuana, as well as medical. And 20 more states have legalized medical marijuana. Some experts say that the presidential election years are the best chance for pro-smoking laws to pass since more people and more liberal people show up to vote when the stakes are so high. According to CBS News, 56% of Americans say the use of marijuana should be legal, a new high, and a slight increase from a year ago. Now just 36% of people think it should not be legal, down 7 points from last year. We asked Matthew Mills, COO and founder of MedX, Inc., a pro-marijuana agriculture company in L.A., if he thought the U.S. Supreme Court could take on this issue this decade. Said Mills, I truly believe that marijuana will be reclassified as a Schedule II drug over the next 2 years. As more and more discoveries are made, it seems apparent that medical marijuana can truly help so many different individuals who suffer from a multitude of illnesses. The fact that opiate usage is at an all-time high and is accidentally killing 50 Americans a day from overdose should set things in motion in a rapid manner.
So, Patrick, what about tobacco farms in the South, abandoned tobacco farms? Is any chance of them being converted over to marijuana farms, do you think, going forward? I mean, wouldn't that be a good use for all that unused land?
Yeah, no, that would be a very, very creative use. Well, I know there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there about to launch big businesses when it relates to marijuana and cannabis.
So right, I've heard that.
It's about to explode.
Right, Wall Street is getting all itchy to get their fingers on that too, aren't they?
As yeah. They should be.
Very interesting. Wow. Well, thanks, Patrick, for that. Okay. And now we are going to take a short break. And when we'll be back, we'll have our fast food minute.
Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of 3 Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network News. I'm Erica Wides, along with Patrick Martins. And now for our Fast Food Minute, sponsored by Cane 5 Vineyard and Winery. First, today in our Fast Food Minute, we're going to go to Rachel, the producer. What have you got, Rachel?
Thanks, Erica. The highly anticipated musical adaptation of Waitress has finally opened on Broadway. But it boasts more than just numbers by singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles. The crew is experimenting with smell-o-vision, making the entire theater smell like fresh-baked pie. Pie consultant Stacey Donnelly has someone bake an actual pie near the orchestra 20 minutes before doors open. Says Donnelly her pies aren't meant to be eaten, since they are made for maximum aroma before anything else. This is a brilliant move to engage all senses in the show, but maybe if the critics were given actual pie, they'd be more inclined to write better reviews. What'd you got for us, Mike?
Smell-o-vision. Didn't John Waters invent that?
Yeah, in polyester, right?
All right. Well, here's a story for you, Rachel, the producer. It's about the me generation of millennials. This Ooh. Is about as craven a story of stupidity and selfishness as I've ever heard this weekend. It worked, you say, haha. Well, let me tell you something. Posing as a teenage narc wasn't cool when Johnny Depp did it in 21 Jump Street, and it's not cool now. All right? Josh Wiley this weekend went around to Park Slope burger joints and ordered drinks and then told the bartenders, I'm an informant for the NYPD. It's up to you to call the police, but you've just given two drinks to a minor. And this was his way of hustling free burgers and beer.
Actually a really good idea.
I think it's pretty smart, Mike.
I never thought of that when I was a teenager.
But when I was a teenager, I just gave God outside in a parking lot to get me my booze.
Don't you still do that, Mike?
Well, there's another food gaffe. This one kind of crazier than all the rest. Ted Cruz chose his running mate, and it's Carly Fiorina. While Cruz dissed cheese lovers and Kasich ate pizza with a knife and fork, get ready for this. Carly Fiorina ate dog food. Yeah. When it comes to food gaffes, I don't know what could possibly top that. In a video, Fiorina played with puppies and took a bite out of a milk-bone dog treat while arguing that dogs are better than cats. The video is part of a series from IJ Review depicting presidential candidates in humorous or self-deprecating situations. I always used to eat milk bones as a kid, Fiorina tells the camera as she frolics with puppies. I thought they were very good. And to prove her point, Fiorina takes a bite out of the milk bone she was holding. And no, Mike, I did not make this story up. And Patrick, I'm not high.
Well, now... Well, that explains why Donald Trump might have called her a dog.
Oh,
oh Lord. Germany's, in my one, Germany's Reinheitsgebot, or Purity Commandment, is one of the world's oldest food safety laws on the planet. It states quite simply that only water, hops, and barley and yeast are permitted in the production of beer. Otherwise, it ain't really beer, not in Germany at least. But many brewers are now challenging this. Of course, you can have a lot of possible combinations under the law, but many are so similar that you cannot taste the difference. They argue that putting natural spices or fruits into beer doesn't make it bad. In theory, a violation of this law can warrant a year in jail and a fine of 20,000 euros, though it is rarely enforced. Tradition or innovation? Which would you choose, Erica?
I don't know if I could make that choice, Patrick, tradition or innovation. But last week, There was a frenzied wave of excitement after a McDonald's franchisee in St. Louis announced an unlimited French fries option in their store. This week, however, the McDonald's Corporation crushed the dreams of fry eaters everywhere by clarifying that this offer was merely a limited-time promotion and not the gateway to fry nirvana that most Americans were hoping for.
Nirvana? I don't know about that.
Well, have you seen people in the Midwest?
Yeah, true.
I know. So no more unlimited free French fries for America. Sorry, guys. Limited time offer. All right. Well, that was our Fast Food Minute brought to you by Cane 5 Vineyard and Winery. We will be right back after this.
This program was brought to you by Eat On North. Eat On North is a casual restaurant where honest, uncomplicated food is served without pretension. Find Eat On North at hotelonnorth.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio News Network. I'm Erica Wides, and we are broadcasting from Heritage Radio Network from behind Bushwick's own Roberta's Pizza in Brooklyn. Speaking of pizza, after decades of Americans fearing and avoiding fat, while at the same time becoming more and more obese, diabetic, and with higher levels of heart disease, the pendulum of opinion on dietary fats is finally swinging the other way. With research emerging on the health benefits of eating a higher fat diet while reducing sugars and refined carbohydrates like orange juice and breakfast cereals, scientists, nutritionists, and doctors are finally changing their long-held yet apparently wrong belief on the intake of fat. Turns out, fat is good for us, especially for our brains. Dr. Richard Isaacson, the director of the Alzheimer's Prevention Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian, said, "Since the brain and body cells need fat to survive and thrive, depriving them of certain types of brain-healthy fats may be detrimental to your memory. The key issue," Dr. Isaacson said, "is the type of fat, with fats being an integral part of a healthy diet. Generally," he said, "there are good fats, bad fats, and fats on which more research is needed to be certain. Certain fats are indeed essential to protect against memory loss, specifically polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats," he said, "while trans fats, the artificially produced kind found in processed food, cheaply made baked items, and margarine products, are harmful. Conflicting data exists for saturated fats, although many studies are pointing to that they have health benefits after all," which I totally believe, not to editorialize. "How brain healthy a fat is tends to vary by individual and depends on precision nutrition. Despite some differences in data on how effective treating a person already with Alzheimer's disease may be, studies do suggest that diets containing healthy levels of unsaturated fats may protect against its development. One type of unsaturated fat, an omega-3 fatty acid called DHA, is known to be essential for the growth and development of the brain in infants and for normal brain function in adults." Dr. Isaacson continued, "In our clinic, we emphasize the consumption of DHA and, in somewhat lesser amounts, EPA. This is important to keep the omega fats in the proper balance with the omega-6 fats, which act differently in the body. To do this through diet, the clinic recommends reducing consumption of vegetable oils high in omega-6s, including corn, sunflower, soybean, and cottonseed oil, as well as the processed foods that contain them. He also recommends eating more fruits and vegetables, whole grains in moderation, fatty fish like wild salmon, albacore tuna, sardines, and mackerel at least once or twice a week, and olive oil used liberally. There's also new research about full-fat dairy products, specifically milk, showing that consumption of whole milk is linked to significantly lower levels of diabetes in children and adults who consume it. Like so many other things, it looks like we were wrong about fat for a long, long time."
Well, as someone who eats a lot of animal fat, I think I'm going to remember that story forever.
It's true.
But now some people are getting fat on the shoulders of our planet. It's time for the weather and Mike Edison.
Doom and gloom.
Oh, the humanity. Is there no end in sight to the damage to our gastronomic pleasures done by climate change? Global warming is affecting every facet of global agriculture, from bees making honey to the Napa Valley wine harvest to potentially catastrophic food and water shortages in Africa. And here is more bad news that is going to hit home particularly hard with the Heritage Radio audience, who I know from experience is a drinking lot. Thanks to man-made global warming. And make no mistake, it was our doing. You know, if there's one thing I'm sure of, it's science. And even though I am not a real meteorologist, I'm just a propped-up on-air weather personality, I will not budge from the facts. I cannot be bought, and especially when it comes to beer, which is the putative point of all this. Because of man-made global warming, craft beers will become scarcer and more expensive as the international hops harvest is hammered by unpredictable and extreme weather. According to Reuters, last summer's hot and dry weather was a heavy blow to the European hop harvest. Germany's harvest shrunk by 27% last summer, according to the International Hop Growers Convention. And there were also sharp declines in other European producers, such as the Czech Republic and Slovenia. And craft brewers are taking the hit, forcing them to raise prices. Prices of some hop varieties have risen by up to 50%, industry sources say, while others are up to five times more expensive or simply not available. Now, craft beers are produced by smaller brewers using traditional methods and can use six times the amount of hops, making a roast IPA, for instance, more than what a commercial brewer would use in lighter and mass-produced lager styles of beer. And the end result is that your boutique beer is going to end up costing boku bucks. In other news, polar ice caps continue to melt, and we're all going to die.
Well, thank you for that story, Mike. Inspiring. And tell us, I thought you were more of a bud guy anyway. Is this really going to affect you?
Are you still talking about pot, Patrick? Or are you talking about Budweiser? Actually, you know, I like Budweiser in the shower. That's my go-to shower beer. In cans, of course, you know, for safety reasons. But I also support local brewers. And I strongly believe that beer culture in America rivals any in the world right now. And, of course, industrial brewers like AB InterBev are never going to suffer. They're just going to do whatever it takes to make the bottom line look good. And the shame is that craft brewers, artisanal craft brewers, are going to have to take a hit because of the selfishness of so many businessmen to take on global warming and reduce carbon emissions. And we all lose one pint at a time.
All right. Well, always our ray of ozone-depleted sunshine. That's our Mike Edison. And raising global temps one week at a time with his uplifting weather reports. Thanks so much, Mike. I guess you could say that hops have taken a jump.
Hey.
Oh, and on that note, let's take a very short break.
Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Well, that song means sports, and Jack Insley.
That's
how's it
me.
Going, Jack?
Good, man. It's been a great week of NBA playoffs.
What an
sure.
injury-plagued season. I mean, this Clipper-Warriors game.
So sad, huh?
They're all injured. Can the Warriors repeat without Steph Curry?
Yeah, I think he'll be back. But as you saw, man, they took care of the Rockets without him. So good sign, huh? I've got the Olympics on the mind. They are quickly approaching. And while the athletes are, of course, the main event, there are plenty of food companies and organizations that want to play too. Sources confirmed to Crain's publication that McDonald's is currently testing a new clean label version of its Chicken McNuggets that it hopes to expand nationwide in time for the 2016 games. The new test features a revamped nugget made with what the chain calls a simpler recipe that does away with artificial preservatives. The new recipe contains ingredients McDonald's says are more recognizable to consumers, such as lemon juice solids and rice starch. Yes. Of course, very popular ingredients. Hershey's is also joining in on the Olympic celebration by changing the silver lettering on their bars for the first time in 122 years. I didn't even know that's how long they've been making those bars. So instead of the silver lettering, they'll be using patriotic red, white, and blue. Hershey, of course, is an official sponsor of the United States Olympic Committee and the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic teams. The candies are now for sale at Chocolate World and will become nationally available on May 6th at stores including Walmart and CVS. In more Olympic food news, Great Britain's supermarket chain Aldi has created the Rio skyline out of fresh produce to promote its tie-in with athletes in the run-up to the Olympics. The picture, created by artist Prudence State, uses over 47 tons of produce, including 8 bananas, 8 yellow peppers, 2 bunches of red grapes, 2 plums, and 200 grams of blueberries, making the image of Christ the Redeemer alone. It took 60 hours to create, and in total uses over 30 different types of fruits and vegetables. It's really cool. You should Google it and check it out. And lastly, moving further east, India plans to promote its Made in India initiative by setting up a hospitality house in Rio, but food will be noticeably absent. The Indian Olympic Association and the Sports Ministry were initially keen to use it as a base to serve Indian food to the contingent and were planning to send a chef as well. However, the plan was shelved after the International Olympic Committee included Indian food on their menu, even boasting vegetarian options. An IOA official said there were concerns over the food getting contaminated or any banned product accidentally consumed by an athlete, which was also one of the reasons they decided not to send a chef. So that's your Olympic food wrap-up. And remember, the games kick off on August 5th, and we will be reporting more as we get closer to the start.
Well, I know if I were an Olympic athlete in training, I would definitely be happy about switching to the new healthier chicken McNuggets, Jack. I feel like that would really put that, give me that winning edge.
It's a clear label. Is that like black label? Or I don't know.
And you know, a Hershey bar is my go-to power
yeah,
food.
Yeah, the healthiest stuff for the top athletes in the world. But no Indian food allowed.
No mention about the water in Rio lately, Jack. Let's revisit that one
we'll
shortly.
Get to that.
Let's get to that leading up to it. Yeah, 100 days till the Olympics, so we look forward to a lot more of that from you, Jack. Thanks so much for that. And we will be right back after this.
Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network News. I'm Erica Wise, along with Patrick Martins. And now for our op-ed, we have our own Heritage Radio's executive director, Erin Fairbanks.
Thank you, Erica.
Sure.
Great to be here. Well, I don't know about you, but this primary season has got me down. Bernie, Hillary, Trump, Cruz, we've been inundated with talks on personality, the gaffes, who has the biggest plane, entourage, even which candidate eats the most pizza. Some mornings I just wake up and it's hard to remember what is the point of it all. But our elected officials have a huge impact, in particular on our food supply. And I'm excited to share that here in New York State, Governor Andrew Cuomo has just announced an unprecedented allocation in this year's budget, $300 million in funding for the Environmental Protection Fund. This positions New York State as a national leader in conservation of critical natural resources. For future generations and current generations, also supports job growth and making our state more resilient to climate change. 2016 also marks the 20th anniversary of state funding to protect farmland. And as our friends of over at American Farmland Trust like to say, without farms, there's no food. I talk with farmers every week on my show, The Farm Report. And one of the biggest challenges that they share with me is the struggle to find land, to find lease contracts that work for them, buying land, maintaining land. And get this, imagine you're in your mid-60s. You've worked your butt off for 40-plus years, and the biggest asset that you have is your property. The pressure for farmers to sell is huge. And you can make a lot more money selling your scenic vistas to a developer who wants to chop up your farm into 24 lots for McMansions than you can selling to a young upstart farmer, which is why $20 million of the $300 million allocation is set aside specifically to protect farmland. These state-funded initiatives have a huge impact on protecting our food supply. It's nice to see our governor taking such a bold stance, but it begs the question, Bernie, Hillary, Trump, Cruz, what are you doing to support the next generation of our nation's farmers? Listeners, stay tuned to HRNN to find out.
They're eating dog food. That's what they're doing to help farmers.
Oh, brother.
Well, Hillary's a little too tight with Monsanto for me to think she's so good for the farming community. But,
is it wrong of me to want to watch Carly Fiorina eat a milk bone?
Stop.
I'm going to go home and Google that. I have to watch her eat that milk bone. Yeah.
That was great, though, Erin.
So it's
Thank
not
you.
Just me.
Yeah. Thanks, Erin. That was excellent. And now to wrap up the show, we have an obit for one of our pioneers in the world of radio. And this one actually strikes very close to home for me. Patrick?
Thanks, Erica. Well, Elton Spitzer, who helped turn WLIR into a radio destination, died this week. Their slogan was Dare to be Different, and they aired emergent music ignored by other media streams. The Replacements, the B-52s, the Smiths, Duran Duran, Blondie, Joan Jett, and the Blackhearts. New Yorkers and Long Islanders had Elton Spitzer to thank for being able to hear those tunes. Like HRN's, his was a passionate niche audience destined to go mainstream. He was 84.
Such a bummer.
Yeah, seriously. Growing up on Long Island, WLIR was the source for new music, you know, before the internet and all that. But we couldn't get it in the town where I lived. I would actually have to drive toward the city just to pick it up in the car. Yeah, because we lived too far out on the East End. So
LAR was definitely the hip station.
LAR was, I mean, it was it. And there's actually a documentary in the works about the station. And
92.7, right?
92.7 WLAR. It was the best. Wow. It was the best, yeah.
One of the few things Long Island can be proud of.
One of the few things, right? The beaches and the radio.
He apparently played I Want to Get Sedated sedated.
I want to be 15 sedated
15 times in a row when Ronald Reagan got elected.
When Reagan was reelected, right? When he was reelected, they went on air and played "I Want to Be Sedated" 15 times.
Wonderful.
Nonstop. Yeah. So, well, thanks for that, Patrick. That's a sad note in the world of radio. But anyway, thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network News this week. From me, Erica Wise, Patrick Martins, Jack Inslee on sport, Mike Edison on the weather, and our special editorial guest, Aaron Fairbanks, and Rachel, the producer. We will see you next week.
And of course, thanks to David, our engineer. Awesome job.